Welcome to all those who have just joined us. Very warm welcome. We are about to get started with the eighth session at the ISAP 2012 General Assembly here in Johannesburg, South Africa. Very nice and almost summer-like weather that we have over here at the moment. I expected it to be quite cold. Just remember that you can interact with us via the Twitter ID, which is ICEB2012.
Please take your seats.
And you can also email us at live@iceb2012.net. As you heard there, we are about to get started.
All right, everyone. Hopefully we can get underway again. I always worry about these announcements because I do them at the beginning and at the end, and I don't know who's not quite arrived and who snuck off early. But they're all important. So these announcements before Hazel Marshall commences her paper. First one is, somehow or other, Jean actually did submit a report about the Training and Implementation Materials Committee. And I guess it's my fault, I just wasn't thoroughly checking every last thing, and somehow, even though she absolutely sent it, it got somehow left out. So my apologies, Jean, because that's an oversight of mine. But there are print copies of the report, which is a page long, and I think we'll get you to read it for us tomorrow. And so that's that thing. Now the next thing is a reminder tonight. If we're not here at 5 p.m., we get left behind. But another important piece of additional news, two more pieces of news. There's a cash bar on tonight at the bowling club at the Briar. And we're having live streaming of a presentation tonight. So Hanif is running live streaming from this evening's function, which is pretty amazing. Also, if you haven't filled in your dinner menu for Wednesday night, please see Mika. In fact, are you in the room, Mika? Yes. Right, Mika's right down the back. Do you think you've got all the dinner menus? Hopefully. Anyway, I think you want them by 4 o'clock, or have I made that up? With a bit of luck, you will have all filled in your dinner menus for Wednesday night. Now, let's move on. And
Mary?
Yes. Bill Jolly.
Thank you. I'm just wondering if we know what time that presentation will be, is scheduled to be.
I believe we will be finishing at 4:30, and I believe the presentation... Let me get this right. It's at the start of the evening because
I'd just like to send a note to someone if I can.
Kathy wanted us all the formalities to be over before we started eating and drinking. I think that's right.
Yes,
that's what she said to us this morning. We can expect to be... we're not sure about the traffic, the Johannesburg traffic. It's funny about all these big cities have the same problem. We're not certain about Johannesburg traffic, but Christo's looking for the call, so let's get a good answer
from
Christo. Thank
you, Mary. Tonight's Master of Ceremonies is in the room. Yeah, we can agree with him at what time we would want the streaming to go, I'm sure of that. That's the one thing.
I think Kathy want... it to be early, so it could
yes,
be
sir,
6:30.
That's close enough.
Is my feeling.
Yes. Yeah, and
thank
then,
you.
Yes, there will be a cash bar, but there will be wine at the tables.
Goodness. That's very generous, Christo. Thank you. Thank you very much. Now, our next paper... some challenges in teaching Braille to adult beginners in multilingual South Africa by Hazel Marshall. And we're really looking forward to this paper from you, Hazel. So it's all yours. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and good afternoon to those present and also to those listening. The paper will refer to the low literacy rate in the country and the even poorer rate among blind people. Information will be provided on resources or lack thereof. And information will also be provided on materials and methods used to teach in poorly resourced areas and often to students who do not speak the same language as the teacher. And then specific suggestions will be put forward concerning ways of fast-tracking the production of teaching manuals and reading materials for beginners. When I say beginners, I mean adult beginners. And attention will also be given to Braille writing and writing equipment. In introducing this topic, I also need to introduce myself so that what I have to say may be understood in context. Like so many of my counterparts in the field of teaching Braille to adults in South Africa, I'm neither an academically qualified teacher, nor do I consider myself to be a Braille expert. I'm a Braille user and lover of Braille who has found herself stepping into the breach to teach and to make decisions on Braille because there was no one else to call on at the time. It is regrettable that recipients of my teaching and practical and intellectual contributions to decision-making should have been dependent on a lay person. Nevertheless, that is how things are in South Africa and possibly in many other countries too, where disability in general and Braille in particular are not very high on the national or even the educational agenda. It is therefore with the greatest admiration that I pay tribute to all the volunteers, some of them in this room, who have done so much, sometimes in professional time, mainly in their own time, to provide what we do have. We are told that literacy and numeracy levels of the general public in South Africa are among the lowest in Africa and consequently in the world. This is despite the fact that we have more wealth and a stronger economy than any other African country. There are many reasons for this, and not the least is that the majority of the South African public have had very poor educational opportunities for generations. Paradoxically, education for blind South Africans who were educated at special schools may possibly have been of a higher standard than that provided for their sighted peers. At present, especially in the Eastern Cape province, where I happen to come from, education is in a crisis. And school leavers, even school leavers aspiring to go to university, are functionally illiterate. By far the majority of blind people, about 75%, who have been my Braille students over 3 to 4 decades, are persons who lost their sight in later life, have very low academic competencies, or who finished or dropped out of school many years before they reached us. This means that many of them have lost any literacy skills that they might have possessed. When one considers that a sighted person with low literacy skills nevertheless does have the opportunity to see words written on packages, on advertising billboards, when they shop on street names and so on, they maintain some literacy, but this is not the case with blind people, who, of course, don't see what is around them. It is certainly not all doom and gloom when it comes to braille development and production in South Africa. You have already heard from previous speakers about the code development for all our languages, and you also have heard of the production units where we have some of the most sophisticated equipment available. The Unified Braille Code was adopted, and many efforts were made in workshops, courses, to bring people up to speed. So where is the most serious lack? I must say, Madam Chair, that this is very much my opinion and the opinion of the organisation that I come from. There are no basic training courses for teachers of Braille in South Africa, and consequently, no formal qualifications. The only rehabilitation staff who are trained in Braille are orientation and mobility staff, and that is very, very basic. We have never had manuals for the teaching of any languages other than Afrikaans and English. And to date, we have not had any manuals for Afrikaans or English in UBC. The first one in English has just become available. We are still, therefore, those of us who are teaching adult beginners are using free UBC manuals. And as I said, there are really only two, English and Afrikaans. I'm sure that I don't have to point out to this audience that teaching the code falls far short of teaching a student to read, especially by touch. South Africa's national braille examinations, and possibly others in the world, examine writing skills and not reading skills. And as regards writing, whether using a slate and stylus or a mechanical braille writer, I have not come across a manual in South Africa, particularly in any language in South Africa that teaches this skill. The result is that the literacy rate among newly blind adults remains low, and they are not enabled to benefit from the existing literature, and there are people who don't think it is worthwhile to produce literature suited to their specific language and intellectual needs because they can't read it. So there we have the chicken and egg situation. Teaching adult beginners, apart from the not infrequent situation where a braille user finds himself in the position of imparting what he knows to a newly blinded person on an ad hoc basis, adults may go to adult basic education centres, although they don't all teach braille. They may make use of the Karigudi campaign that we've heard about from Dr. McGurvey, and that takes them onto the lowest rung of literature. Then, above that, they may like to continue with Braille, and in South Africa, in the 105 member organisations of the South African National Council, there are about 10 where Braille is taught. It's interesting to me, and it always has been, that Braille is normally taught by volunteers, unpaid volunteers, or by poorly paid instructors. And why such an important and fundamental skill as literacy should be regarded through the language anyway as to be an instruction rather than being taught by a teacher. It's just one of those things that I have found rather strange. Now, when teaching Braille to adult beginners, what we often find is that the small groups that we teach, 4 to 5 people maybe, are very, very helpful in translating what the teacher is saying to people who don't speak the same language. But we have to be sure that we actually understand each other with the basic things, such as reading Braille with the pads of one's fingers and not with the tips, and also that one understands the words like top, left, right, all those things that we take for granted when we are speaking in another language. I have to say that the majority of my own students are Khoisan speaking, and although I follow spoken Khoisan quite easily, I don't speak it myself. Now, what we also do is we don't teach the code by teaching people by numbers, as it were. So we teach them the shapes of the letters, and we also teach them that Braille is put together by putting those dots in the spaces where you wish them to be. And even though we are teaching adults, we use egg boxes that in South Africa anyway look exactly like a Braille cell, with 3 dots down the left and 3 down the right. And we use quite inexpensive counters that people put into the boxes so that they learn that one doesn't just strike a key on a keyboard to make a letter. The reason we do this is that most of our students have to travel by rather difficult, shall we say, public transport, and equipment gets lost, and it really doesn't matter if one loses an egg box. It's easy to replace it. And then what we do is from there we go onto the ordinary pegboard that some of you may remember, and then from there onto paper, onto books, and we always supply new books to each student because, of course, they do tend to get very flattened. The next little section may give you a clue as to what my real profession is, because we pay a lot of attention to making reading enjoyable by paying attention to posture, to the height of the desk or the table, to the positioning of the chair, to exercises for relaxation, to exercises for strengthening the small muscles and making the hands more supple, and also to basic skin care. I must say South African men don't take terribly kindly to be told to maybe just dip their fingers into their wives' hand cream, but it often is necessary. Then the most commonly used writing equipment in South Africa is the Perkins Brailler. And, Madam Chair, if I say that the majority of the people that we are dealing with subsist on disability grants, which amount to about $150 US per month, and a Perkins Brailler, I haven't worked it out in dollars, but it's 5,000 rand, then I think it is clear that people can't often afford to buy a Perkins Brailler. And that is why we tend to favour slate and stylus. And we also get some opposition from educators in other areas and people who probably know a good deal more about education than we do, that it really isn't quite such a good idea to teach people to write in reverse. Well, we just don't scare them. We don't tell them we provide the slate and stylus or the pocket frame and show a person how to do it, and off they go. And so far it has worked. And I, as I said, this goes back over many, many years. The majority of our students learn grade one Braille efficiently enough to be able to do what they want to do. Write a telephone number, write a shopping list. Some go on to grade two Braille, and then very soon we encourage them to start reading local magazines that they can obtain, all free of charge, and in UBC. Oh, I should have said that although we are still using free UBC books, we remind them, we just explain what the changes are as they go along. And as a speaker said yesterday, it is surprising how easy it really is to read ordinary literary Braille. To digress just for a moment, it is interesting to discover why people wish to learn Braille. For many, it is because they know or have been told that that is what blind people do. But others will have given some more thought to it and do have some reasons. Now, at the beginning of each course that we give, I write down, without any comment, the reason why my student wishes to learn Braille. And then as we go along, we review the situation and sometimes have to tone down the loftier ideas. So in a recent group, I had the following. To be able to teach others to read the Bible, to go back to school. That was a young learner of 15 years old. To make shopping lists, and what I'm happy to say is the last two that I mentioned did achieve what they set out to do. I think from the previous paragraphs my audience will have grasped a picture of a somewhat uncoordinated and fragmented infrastructure to Braille literacy in South Africa. Much of what is available is of high quality, but there are too many weak links. Now, designing and producing manuals for teaching Braille take an inordinately long time, because so far in our country anyway, they've been done in people's spare time. And at the moment we are still using for Afrikaans a book that was produced in the early 60s, and for English, as I said, we have just acquired a new one, but that was also around about that time. And in a conversation with three authors, two that are published and one to be published, I have found that by far most time is taken up in actually creating the sentences and the words and so on for practice in these manuals. In South Africa, we teach Braille in groups of letters, usually from A to E, and then from F to J, and then so on through the alphabet, and then along the normal Braille order until we get right through. And the books are compiled in such a way that the student will read the word in the final form, so that he won't learn thank you right at the beginning, because it's got a TH contraction. That will take a long, long time before he can actually write please or thank you for that matter. I've just given a small example of the words then, how this would affect what one says. Now, in English, it does mean that the early sentences are quite stilted, and in Afrikaans as well. And the little I know about Khoza, I think it's almost impossible to get really sensible sentences and so on, because of the letters that are more frequent in Khoza. The frequencies are different. So it's not my intention to clutter this paper with what I imagine can be done about it, but very briefly, I imagine that what can be done about it is by using computer programs and, as it were, releasing the first groups of words that one can use, and then more and more as contractions are learnt, then in time one would then have a full vocabulary that can be used. This means that one would not have to depend on braille experts to create the literature for practice. There are many other people that could do that. And in that way too, one could use editors and translators and so on to produce the material much, much quicker. I was saying to a colleague a moment ago that if we maintain the pace that we are doing now, by about 200 years from now, we might have produced manuals for all our languages. And that's obviously totally unacceptable. So that would be an idea, but I would be willing to give a lot more of the conceptualization if anyone would like to talk to me about it. Then I'd like to just say a little bit about braille writing equipment, because it really is not enough just to learn to read if one cannot write and cannot communicate with oneself. As I said earlier, because of the expense, we tend to use the slate and stylus, but for people who cannot face the notion of this mirror writing, there is a device that has been advertised by the RNIV. It's the King range of upward writers, so one actually writes from left to right as one reads. And I think this is something that could be looked at, and I'm hoping that the inventors around this room are already thinking of better ways to do it. But of course it has to be very inexpensive to have any impact on the majority of South Africans. So, Madam Chair, just in conclusion, dreaming about better days for Braille is far too idealistic and non-productive. We need to take strong, coordinated, and purpose-driven action. At present, Braille usage is not only diminishing, it is dying, and we are helping to kill it, not by deliberate action, but by omission. There is far too much tiptoeing around issues and personalities by most of us, I include myself, not wishing to tread on any toes. Firstly, we need to obtain the buy-in of everyone in our field who is in a decision-making and or an executive position. Let's take UBC as an easy example. The code has been used successfully in magazine production in South Africa for far more than a decade, but its usage and advantages remain relatively unknown among the principals of special schools and the executive officers of specialist service organizations. This is because they don't read Braille magazines, nor do they participate in the activities of, well, I now say Braille SA, but it will of course now be the South African Braille Authority, or discussions on the email lists. Those among them who are Braille users themselves may be counted on the fingers of one hand. We also need the buy-in of government departments and government officials and pressure from the blindness sector to ensure that they are held accountable for implementing their own very worthwhile policies. Secondly, we need to devise an implementable strategic plan based on the objectives of the Constitution of the South African Braille Authority, and we need strong drivers and advocates to ensure that planning is implemented. I may be getting a little bit nostalgic here, but advocates for Braille, like Victor Adonis and Harry Mahaly, just don't seem to have people in our country following in their footsteps. And I think if anyone remembers Harry's unique style of advocacy, which I will not exactly repeat word for word here, then they will know that we need to get to that again. From an economic point of view, it makes no sense to pour millions into producing more and more Braille if blind people who need it are not empowered to use it. Nor does it make sense to encourage passionate, hard-working people to continue their work in vain. This means that the weak links in the chain need to be strengthened to the point where they equal the stronger links. All the individual effort needs to be added to the collective effort to build and maintain the Braille infrastructure of South Africa. Madam Chair, I thank you for listening to me, and I hope that we will have some results of what I have been advocating. Thank you.
Thank you very much, Hazel. Do we have any questions and comments? No. Yes, Bill.
Sorry, but can I just finish writing this note?
Oh, dear.
Right, I was just making a note of a point that Hazel had made. There's a question I'd like to ask you, Hazel, and also anyone else who may have an answer to contribute. Have you yet been able to develop a view about whether whether UEB is easier to learn to write than SEB, or roughly as easy? I ask the question because I was struck by, I absolutely agree with those who say that reading literary UEB is very easy. Some people may not notice after a time what code they're reading in, and I've been known to forget what code I read something in when I've been concentrating on the content of the document, although I tend to pay more attention to coding details. But I was very struck by the fact that people from Australia and New Zealand, whom we sampled in our preparations for making the change to UEB, whether they had always been supporters of UEB or whether they had become converted to it during the process of transition. made remarks like, but I can always write however I want to, on the assumption that would be that writing is a private matter. But if you're writing for other people, you can't always write however you want to. At the moment, I'm writing in a way that you wouldn't be able to read. It's neither good SEB nor good UEB nor good anything else. And if I leave it too long before I look at it, I have to decipher it. And I'm not suggesting that you should have a code like that. But it is important to know how easy the writing of UEB will be for people. I mean, there are some features of it that seem to me to be good from that point of view, others that seem to be less good. Has anyone done any research on this or made any coherent observations that would illuminate this point?
Hazel, do you want to...
No, I'm not aware of that, and I'm afraid I just have to make the remark that I make to people when they ask me that, and I say, well, my friend is Duxbury, but I do know that not everyone has access to be able to print what they've typed out in MS Word. But I do think the point that the speaker made, that for private writing, I don't think anybody writes as one with print. So, for instance, we in South Africa have used capital letters for donkey's years, but if I write a note just to a friend, I don't use it because that's not how I learned Braille. So from a point of view of private writing, I don't think it would make a great deal of difference. It may be more complicated because of the signs that are two-cell signs that were not before, but, you know, because I've been very, very interested and supportive of UEB from the outset. I have to confess that I haven't given much thought to it, and I suppose this is the way we're going to go, so we'll have to make absolutely sure that those manuals that I'm talking about take that into consideration to teach people to write properly as well.
Any other points? South Africa?
If I can make a private remark, I think one writes in pictures. You see the picture of the word you used to read, and then you write that. At the moment, I find it. I also the most of my Braille writing in my computer is Duxbury writing, because my documents usually have to be in print and in Braille. So I print them, and then Duxbury does the Braille for me. But my own private writing is for me now, although I don't do much of it, is for me now more difficult in pre-unified Braille than in unified Braille, because I see the unified Braille pictures and I just replicate them.
Canada.
I wondered how important the teaching manuals are to have national items of interest in the examples when adults particularly are learning Braille. Many of us have developed manuals to teach adults, and I'm just wondering about the sharing of them. And if having that Canadian emphasis would be a detriment to somebody from another country using one of our manuals.
May I answer that? I think certainly it would be a good way of having a manual rather than not having a manual. There is the added problem that they would be English, and a lot of our...
Due to a power failure, transmission was interrupted, and consequently, a few minutes of the session could not be recorded. We will now proceed with the rest of the session and apologize for the inconvenience. Thank you.
I trained as a teacher and then later joined special education. I was a teacher for the visually impaired for about 3 years. Then I was taken by the Minister of Education to represent, you know, examinations at national level. I worked there for 20 years. And then a few years back, when the economy in Zimbabwe just went down, Sister Catherine Jackson, who is the founder, member of Dorothy Dangan Braille Library, just poached me from the ministry to join her. That's where I am currently. And we are the only people in Zimbabwe currently who are doing production of Braille material, books for primary and secondary school. The ministry had started one some time back, and it's, you know, the organization is no longer working at the moment. So we are the only ones who are producing books for the ministry. But our problem now, if we want to start a Braille authority in Zimbabwe, you know, we have challenges. If we are to organize people to come together, we need to, you know, they ask for bus fares and the like. We as an organization, we are a charitable organization, and we are not making any profits, and we depend on donations. We cannot raise money to bring those people together. You see, the ministry at the moment is just silent, and we talk about it with them. They say, no, we have no funds at the moment. So that is one of the biggest challenges that we are facing as an organization. After all, we are not having any funding from government. And Sister just sent me here so that I could be in picture of, you know, the new UBE, so that when we do production of books, we will be doing, you know, blind people justice by printing them what they would know. But the problem is, how are, you know, students and pupils going to learn this if they are not represented, you know, at classroom level, at teacher education level? You know, that is one of the biggest challenges that we have. We are just an organization, but we are doing very, very good work for the government, but they are not realizing that one.
No. Well, thank you, Andrew. Thank you very much. Do we have any further comments? Australia?
Thank you, Madam Chair. I visited the Dorothy Duncan Centre some 18 years ago, and there's some fantastic work done there under very difficult circumstances. The comment I want to make, the main comment I want to make is that following on from comments made by Jace Nayer, I think it's really important that we lift our engagement in ICEP with the relevant parts of ICEVI, the International Council on Education of People with Visual Impairment, and WBU, the World Blind Union, and that we do it in a sense not just sort of globally, but region by region and sub-region by sub-region. That is, we look at the structures of those organisations. The ICEVI with its experience in education, and WBU with its experience in advocacy, both of which are, of course, passionately interested in Braille, and that we use the opportunity now of unified English Braille, having been complete in terms of its codification, and now look in terms of the promulgation of UEB into developing countries. It's an opportunity. It's, in a sense, it's something new that we can talk about. That we're not going back on, in a sense, on the same issues, although the same issues are important. but it enables people to, in a sense, to hear the same message dressed up differently. So I think that Unified English Braille as a promotion tool is particularly opportune and beneficial for us. And of course, then there are the significant benefits in terms of the utility of Braille that flow through. And there are some of these thoughts in my head in the resolution that I'm drafting that we'll talk about later in the week. But I'll try and capture some of these thoughts in that resolution.
Thank you, Bill. Further comment? UK.
Two quick observations. We talk about the World Braille Council, but I really do not know how well Africa is represented in the World Braille Council at all. Actually, that's a slightly rhetorical question. I do know how well it's represented. And I think that issue does need to be addressed, and certainly I think as ICEB we can play a part in addressing that. But I do take the point that Mr. Nair was making, that we need to work through our delegates to AFABUN and WBU to make sure that point also gets made, that the World Braille Council should in fact be world and needs to include representation from Africa. My second point is to reflect on something I said yesterday, which is that I do believe that there is funding available for all manner of projects to enable organisations to develop. As an example, if we want to create an authority in a country, a Braille authority in a country, we could describe that as a project, the deliverable being the development and support of an authority to develop Braille in the country. I think if we describe that in terms of a project and actually give it, some scope and understand the resources that are needed to set it up, I do think there's funding opportunities available to enable that sort of project to develop. So I would encourage us all to think quite laterally about how projects might work. And if we can actually put projects together that actually have some specific deliverables and a key understanding of the finances that would be required, I think there's a role for ICB to play in facilitating the development of those projects through the various funding sources that we're aware of.
Another spokesman from Botswana.
Yeah, it's Mujib from Botswana. I'm working in the Braille production unit in Botswana under the Minister of Education. Our major concern, or I could say my concern, is manpower in the production center. Manpower in the sense that we actually don't have people who can repair the technician. Our technicians are not well informed in specialized equipments. Specialized equipments like, they cannot trace the troubleshooting. If we have a problem with our Duxbury, which is the system we are using, they cannot trace the troubleshooting. When getting to embossers, they cannot repair embossers. And again, we actually don't have skills on the use of adaptive technology. That is our major concern. Manpower, I'm talking in terms of, I'm actually one in the Braille Production Center who understand Braille. Most of our people who understand Braille, they are at schools. So that's my major a concern, because I'm actually covering from primary to tertiary education. I'm very happy with the new development, because we are starting our production, our Braille production center. So we are actually going to join the Unified from the start. Thank you.
Thank you very much. I'm going to need to draw this session to a close, as it's almost 4:30, is there one final burning comment that someone wishes to make? No? Thank you very much for helping us understand the nature of some of the difficulties that are facing you in Africa. And it's been a very short but still interesting session. Thank you for the papers this afternoon. We will close now. And just a reminder, 5 o'clock regroup here for our trip to our evening's entertainment. And we'll meet you back here tomorrow morning at 8:30.
Thank you.
Tomorrow morning is whatever the papers are. It's only tomorrow afternoon that's a high old confusion at the moment. Tomorrow morning is papers, Bill. So yes. So the papers are as per the program.
I would just like to reiterate that we had a power cut a few minutes ago, and we had to wait a few minutes for the generators to kick back in again. Unfortunately, our connectivity was affected as well, so I would like to sincerely apologize on behalf of ISEB and the organizing committees for this inconvenience. We will be disconnecting the stream. Please watch the Twitter stream, since we will be going live tonight from the braai that we will be having, or barbecue that we will be having later on this evening. Just monitor the Twitter stream. Thanks for listening, thanks for your understanding and for your patronage. My name is Hanif Kruger, and till later, take care.